Good evening, everyone. I apologize for my almost tardiness here. I tried to gobble down a little dinner with my wife before I started. So I do apologize. I'm just going to bring up my other screen here. Take a second. Kim, are you set to go?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Adelita, are you all set to go?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Cecilia Tavallaro checking in.
Thank you. We'll just be one second here as I bring up the last of my information here. Kim, we'll call together this workshop, and it is February 23rd at 6:01 p.m. Kim, would you please call the roll to start with, please?
Yes. Assembly members Morrison?
Here.
Ryan Howe?
Here.
Dalrymple?
Here.
David Powell? Corson?
Here.
Gilbert?
Here.
And Mayor Prasanka.
And I am present. Assembly Member Powell did send along that he is in Ketchikan and will not be attending the work session, but will be attending the regular assembly meeting. Kim, thank you. This is a work session tonight on the federal landless legislation that is being brought forward through the federal government to help procure lands that were missed in the original allocation of lands that were done for Alaska Natives. And we've had, as we know, our landless Natives have been fighting for many years in an attempt to write this oversight. And I've had an opportunity to sit through multiple meetings now and listen to questions that folks have raised, both from a meeting that I sat in on over a year ago now, that was predominantly attended by tribe members. And then recently we hosted a community meeting that our city manager hosted. And she was did a fine job of having folks bring forward questions from the community and an opportunity for Mr. Reinhart and his team to answer that. What I'd like to do right now, Mr. Reinhart, if at all possible, could you please go forward and introduce your crew to the assembly so we all know who the players are here. It's a good looking crew, so let's get her done.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to just introduce them the way I see them on my screen. So that's my order. Nicole Hollenstad is, she's a landless shareholder from Petersburg, and she is on the Sea Alaska board with me. And then I see, let's see here, Todd Aniokia is, he's with Cedar Group, and Cedar Group, we engaged to do the Alaska Natives Without Land campaign. It is a campaign, it's not an entity. It's a campaign being run by the Southeast Landless Corporation. Andrew Vanderjack is a partner with Van S. Feldman out of Washington, DC. But Andrew is a Southeast guy. He was born and raised in Southeast Alaska, graduated from JDHS. And then Cecilia Tavallaro is the president of the Southeast Landless Corporation, which is the group corporation or the regional corporation that each community, Wrangell, Petersburg, Ketchikan, Haines, and Tenneke all have two members each on their board, and Cecilia is their chair. She's a landless shareholder from Petersburg. So I don't know if anybody else is on. I was trying to look back and forth between the screens. LaVon Garvey is a board member for representative from Wrangell, and Leo Barlow is the other representative from Wrangell. I don't see either of them on tonight.
I see LaVon is on.
Oh, is she? Okay. I was trying to see what. So LaVon Garvey is a, she grew up in Wrangell. She's landless from Wrangell, and she is on the Southeast Landless Corporation as a Wrangell representative.
Thank you very much, Mr. Reinhart. I appreciate those introductions and welcome to everyone. And thank you for taking time tonight to come and speak with the Borough Assembly. The process that I outlined early on with our city manager was that I wanted an opportunity for the community to be able to meet with Mr. Reinhart and the other members of the board and his committee to answer specific questions that the community might have. And I just want to say that I fully recognize that this is a sensitive issue. And it's sensitive for a variety of reasons. It's sensitive because the folks in Wrangell who are the indigenous people here have been waiting and have a claim. And it's sensitive from other people's perspectives who have lived here, not as long, but feel that they have a claim to certain areas as well, just through recreation or otherwise. And I want us to be cognizant of bringing everybody along, because it is a bit of a journey. And so I want to, at the end of the day, have us working together and not in opposition, because as our city manager has eloquently expressed to me, that there is some fantastic benefits to the return of federal lands into public hands. And And I think that the concerns, at least that I have read and that have been expressed through the assembly, are more about loss of opportunity for folks on a small island for recreation, berry picking, and traditional activities that community members have been able to participate in. So I want to turn at this point, turn it over to Lisa to walk us through. She today sent me a whole slew of information on things that she has gathered, and an opportunity for the community to hear some answers to some potential questions. And Kim, is this on Facebook right now?
Yes, it is.
Okay, excellent. I wanted to ensure that it was, so that folks at home can easily tune in and hear as well. And we are recording this as well?
Excellent. Yes, I am.
Okay, and with that, that's all I'm gonna turn it over to Lisa at this point. I appreciate everybody's time very much. I know it's valuable. And so Lisa, please go ahead.
So Mr. Mayor, thank you. One of the first things I wanted to bring up is a conversation that was started, or a bit of a discussion that was started during the community meeting, which was about recreational areas that are within the selected lands for Wrangell. And Richard outlined what some, maybe all of those are, I can't remember, during the community meeting. I know Carol Rushmore, our Economic Development Director, has a list of those as well that we can go over if necessary. But the invitation was made at the community meeting that we could work together as a community to try to determine if some or all, whatever of those recreation sites should potentially be pulled out and excluded from the selections, and other areas directly adjacent to those selections be added in. And so what I'd like to do is have a discussion about how we come up with a group here in Wrangell that is appointed, you know, I don't know if it's a committee, a subcommittee of the assembly that is appointed, that's representative of the community, to talk about that so that we make those decisions, that we're sitting down as a group with the landless representatives and representatives from the community and having a discussion about how that works. So I'm opening the floor to ideas.
Mr. Reinhardt, is that something that you would be interested in seeing happen, that your group would be interested in entertaining that process with us, I guess would be a question?
Certainly. We talked about last week, I had six locations that I identified, and they were the Garnet Ledge. There's a selection close to it. Chichkoff Peak, the trail that runs up by the Institute Creek and Rainbow Falls. The Inner Wrangell Island selection that includes Lower and Upper Salamander Creek campgrounds. Turn Island, the trail that goes down to Turn Island Beach. Frosty Bay Cabin, and there's a LTF or Marine Access Facility there as well. So those five actually in Wrangell. Then the other one is over on Prince Wales Island at Lake Bay. What we talked about was that in the other communities, in Ketchikan, Petersburg, and Tinicky, I think maybe Haynes has worked on it as well, where they've actually sectioned off some portions of it. So let's just take the Frosty Bay Cabin, which is the only cabin out of all of these. And what we'd be proposing is, say, to cut out 40 acres around that cabin and leave that in Forest Service hands, and then add 40 acres on the other side of the parcel. So that can be done in a couple of these. The inner Wrangell, I think it's the lower, I might get these mixed up. I think it's the Lower Salamander, which is in a corner of the selection, could probably be sectioned off and added on the other side. And then the Turn Island is another one that could be, you could take a quarter section of land, so 160 acres out of one section, and add 160 acres on another, take like the northwest section of one area and then move it over into the southeast section of another area. So that's possible. Now, some of them, like the Garnet Ledge and the trail that goes up by Rainbow Falls, that's not quite the case. That's more of a situation where we're talking about easements and access and continuation of those easements and access. And I know there's some concern about do those go on forever? And we've had questions back and forth about that. And I know you all want to, you know, probably hear it from the BLM themselves and probably from our delegation. So we were going to, you know, initiate that contact for you, find out who it is at BLM that you should talk to, and we'll put you in contact with them. We'll let the delegation know that that's a concern for you and ask them to talk to you about it. And we can also have, we have a resource that's available that he can help identify where those easements are and look for them. You know, there's not really a lot more than the ones I just mentioned, but there might be others. So we can look for those. And I just had some correspondence with Andrew earlier, and we're going to, you know, make those three moves right away to start that process.
First of all, full disclosure, we actually have our former Forest Service ranger, the head ranger, assembly member Dalrymple, was there for years, and so he's pretty darn familiar with the forest stuff. And Bob,
that's, I would
need you to weigh in wherever possible.
All right, Richard, I did work with your father a little bit on this when I first got to Wrangell, so been involved for quite a while here and looking forward to seeing this through.
Great. Your knowledge will be real helpful. So one of the things I did bring up in our meeting last week is, you know, the community may not want us to move out. And one thing I heard from a lot of people is a lot of people said, why did you pick those selections of land? Couldn't you have found better stuff? And the truth is, not really. There's a lot of selections already. You know, city and borough has your selections, mental health and the university system has their selections, the state has theirs. And then what's not readily apparent to a lot of people is there are selections or set asides in various LUDs, you know, land use districts of the Forest Service, where they have it designated for conservation or some other type of use that really limits the usage. So there isn't a lot, but, you know, I offered up, maybe we give up the section or a quarter section of land around Turn Island, but then I don't know, you know, maybe a committee could come together and say, you know what, we'd really rather see that developed a little more. Let's see what we can do if there's a private landowner that could develop that and turn it into something more. I'm not saying that we would on that one, but you know, there's ideas like that that might be the smarter move for the whole community.
I really appreciate that, Mr. Reinhart, and I want to. I'm not saying that I think the idea of changing the selection somewhere else. What I'm interested in is the possibility of sort of a win-win for everyone here. And the win-win for me is that if Frosty Bay Cabin in that area is something you want, maybe what we can do is negotiate with the Forest Service to do an on-island cabin. Because one of my big pushes is recreation opportunities for people who are not as privileged to have a boat. We have one cabin on our island, you know, so access for kids to go trout fishing. Families, I see it utilized all the time. Families will drive out the road to a creek and you see a group of kids out there fishing and doing their thing. And I would like to see those opportunities develop. So if Frosty Bay is an area of interest, I can test. I spend a lot of time down that way fishing. And that cabin is hardly ever used. As a matter of fact, the only time I've ever rented it, I've tied my boat up to the float and I haven't gone into the little hole that's the cabin. I would much rather see us leverage with the Forest Service to have an online island facility that a family can drive to. And we know that the Middle Ridge Cabin is extremely popular. It's by far the most popular on the district. And so if we were able to work some type of trade and maybe a partnership even with the Forest Service, that we're able to develop something more local that allows people that are in an economically disadvantaged situation to recreate on the forest. I would be very excited about that. So I appreciate your willingness to shift lands, but in some ways I'm kind of encouraging us to perhaps also be able to leverage some of these things for perhaps better opportunities, especially in the area of recreation for our citizens here. Any assembly members have comments or questions right now?
Steve?
You're on mute, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, sorry. And I should, again, I have full disclosure. Ann was involved with Forest Service for years as well. We're very represented by the Forest Service on this assembly. So go ahead, Ann.
I have a question through the chair to Mr. Reinhart. What type of development are you looking at in the future on these parcels? Or are you?
So the truth is, I cannot say. This is all a ways off. It's all years off. If let's just say in this Congress that this passed, then the BLM has, I believe it's 2 years to convey the land. And in that time, there would be a corporation to be formed, a board of directors would be elected. They would assess what they have. I'm sure they'd have to do some studies and planning and thinking on what they'd want to do. Types of things that I think you could do would be small scale tourism type of things. Mm-hmm. Could have aquaculture type of things, perhaps even agriculture type things. Just different ideas that I see sprouting up around Southeast Alaska for economic development. And I'm sure they'd be open to any really good ideas.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, may I ask a question?
Please, yeah, go ahead, Lisa.
So, Richard, one of the things that Carol and I discussed earlier today is because these lands would be within the borough and now under private hands, they would need to be zoned. So prior to development, they would have to go through the process of being zoned through the Planning and Zoning Commission. Are you aware of any restriction in the legislation against that? My assumption is they would have to go through all the same planning and land use regulations as any other private land in the borough.
I'm going to defer to Andrew or Todd on that and let them, I'm not aware of any, but let's ask those guys. Andrew, do you have any idea?
That is my understanding. I think it might be appropriate to reserve that question as well for the Bureau of Land Management. I think we have a couple of questions that we have for the Bureau of Land Management, including the specific nature of the public process involved in identifying 17B easements, which we have discussed before. I would add this to the list, but yes, Lisa, that is my understanding.
Thank you very much.
Other assembly members with questions? I know that Lisa has a few more there on her list, but is there any thoughts on what's been discussed thus far from the assembly? Yeah, Bob, did I see your hand go up there or did we lose Bob?
No, my hand was up.
Thanks. Okay, sorry, you shifted on my screen to another corner here. Go ahead, Bob.
I guess it's more a comment. And I could see a concern probably of the community, the Forest Service, and the tribe would be public access across the properties. And in reading the legislation and attending the workshop the other day, it seemed like it was very open to maintaining the access on those. And in particular, I was looking at the Anita Bay section, which also includes a log transfer facility. And there's big parts of the road system out of there. So I just hope that there would be a lot of thought on that, both for existing and perhaps future potential access across those lands into the National Forest again, just in the long-term future. But that particular one, because it does it covers a road system several ways out of there. That one would be one to be thinking about. The rest of them, I think, are more simple. Like you mentioned, there was some trails and things. And it seemed to me that the existing rights of way would be honored, if I understood that right.
That is correct. I'm going to let Andrew speak to this a little bit more because I asked him to prep for this. This question comes up a lot. When the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act went through in 1971, it did discuss easements and right-of-ways and access. But when the Sea Alaska bill went through about, what has that been, about 6 years ago now?
That's right.
It did change some and protects the access for the public on, subsistence and recreational uses, even access for commercial uses when they're pre-existing. So I'm going to ask, and the one you talk about, I know that one on Anita Bay is like that whole north end of Etlin Island, that's the access to it. So Andrew, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Please.
So Rich is right. The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act includes a couple of provisions that would apply here. So the provisions of ANCSA carry forward. You'll see language in the bill that establishes that and calls out a couple of specific provisions, one of which is Section 17B of ANCSA, another of which is Section 14G of ANCSA. So just very briefly, I'll cover those, but I think it's really important not to get stuck on those provisions because this legislation does so much more related to public access than the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act did. And I really think it's more important to focus on that, but certainly to the extent that we want to walk through Section 17B and 14G, that's fine as well. So Section 17B of ANCSA requires the Bureau of Land Management working with the state, working with the Forest Service, working with local communities, working with other Native corporations and the public to identify existing public access routes across lands that are to be conveyed to Alaska Native corporations and to establish a full right of public use on what are generally referred to as 17B easements for access to recreation. That includes things like camping, hunting, other transportation systems, for example, access to the other side of the road system, as Bob refers to, utilities, utility corridors, access to docks, access to groupings of homes if there are private inholdings, and other public uses. So Section 17B establishes this process through which these easements are established. It has been pointed out that a Section 17B easement can be revoked by the Bureau of Land Management. So the 17B easement is a property interest that is held onto by the United States. This is not a right that the Urban Corporation retains. It's a property right that the United States retains. The Bureau of Land Management, again, controls this process and the federal government retains the easement. There is a process through which an easement can be revoked. And it's a public process. The BLM under this legislation would have to issue a notice in the Federal Register, take comments from the public, and determine whether that's in the public interest. It's not whether it's in the Urban Corporation's interest, it's whether it's in the public's interest. And then the 17B easements themselves are sized according to use. So there could be, for example, a 1 acre camping area. There could be a 60-foot road easement or a 25-foot road easement or trail easement or a 50-foot road or trail easement. And it's all based on present public use. And so BLM goes through the process of figuring out what that is. Briefly on Section 14G, Section 14G of ANCSA preserves all valid existing rights. So here we're not talking about access so much as we're talking about privately held rights like leases, contracts, rights of ways, easements that are held by someone other than the federal government. All of these are preserved as well. And in the patent that is conveyed to the Alaska Native Corporation, all of these valid existing rights, mining claims is another good one, all of these valid existing rights have to be listed in the patent itself. So the BLM goes through a process of identifying those valid existing rights and preserving those in the patent that's conveyed to the Alaska Native Corporation. I think more importantly, what this legislation does, and I referred to it earlier, and Richard referred to it in the context of the Sea Alaska Land Bill, is it opens all of the land and roads and trails to public access. So I believe you have a packet. I'm going to go ahead and try to identify the page number in the packet. I have that up in front of me. If I don't have it up, I will apologize and try to bring that up in a minute. But for those of you who have the packet open, I'd like to be able to speak to where that is. Well, shoot, it looks like I closed it so that I could get the Zoom information for this meeting. So I'll have to go back to it. But in your packet, the legislation, I think, starts at page 11, and you get down to an area, and you will see language that says public access, the lands conveyed to the urban corporations, and now I'm going to quote, remain open and available to subsistence uses, non-commercial recreational hunting, and fishing, and other non-commercial recreational uses by the public. So that's about as full a right as public access as one could establish. I mentioned that 14G preserves valid existing rights, but there was some concern that it was unclear really what that meant if somebody has, for example, a commercial special use permit. So what the legislation does is it explicitly protects any existing special use permits and also provides for the issuance of an additional 10-year special use permit. And then obviously the urban corporations have every ability to issue further commercial permits on the land. Again, there's a guaranteed in perpetuity right of public access. This is not an easement that can be revoked. It's not like a Section 17B easement. This runs with the land. It's part of the conveyance of the land, that the land shall remain open for subsistence, recreational hunting and fishing and other non-commercial uses. And you will see in the legislation that it talks about, I think it's access on and to all roads and trails for those purposes. So it's over and above the Section 17B easement, which is a specific property right withheld by the United States. The legislation goes above that to say public access across all roads, all trails, to all lands for all of these purposes and lists those purposes. I believe here it is. The other thing that it does is it preserves the right of the Forest Service and importantly for public interests and interests of the folks in Wrangell, the Forest Service's designees to continue to reuse the roads, to continue to use any marine access facilities, to continue to use any other transportation facilities that are conveyed to the urban corporations. So the idea here is to make sure that the Forest Service, timber industry, if they are operating in the area under a Forest Service contract, anybody who's working with the Forest Service is able to continue to use that road network, is able to continue to access marine facilities as they might need to do. The Forest Service asked to include that language and it is in the bill. So altogether,
Andrew, can I just quickly ask,
yes,
does that include so right of way for power lines? One of the questions that we've had come up is about Southeast Alaska Power Agency and their ability to continue their interties and so on.
Right. So the Section 17B authority applies to utility routes. Yeah, utility corridors. That's right. So just to wrap it up, altogether, there's about six pages of language there, all of which deal with public access. There are some minor, the legislation authorizes or allows the urban corporations to manage public access, to ensure public safety, to preserve for environmental protection. I'm trying to remember the list, to protect cultural resources, sacred sites, and to ensure there's no conflict between commercial and recreational uses. This is largely to protect folks who are using the land. Again, this was language that was included in the Sea Alaska Land Bill after extensive conversations with communities at the time, with the Forest Service, with the Bureau of Land Management. And we are aware of one situation in which that authority was used to close lands. It was a situation in which you had surveyors in the forest And the area immediately within that survey area was closed to hunting for the period that those folks were in the forest for their safety. And then that restriction was lifted. But you know, any landowner is going to need to take into account public health and safety needs on that land. The Forest Service would need that. Certainly the urban corporations are going to need that to some extent. But what I think you will find is that it would be exceedingly difficult to imagine a way to provide broader public access to the lands than what we've tried to design in this legislation, working with the Alaska delegation, again, working with the Forest Service over time to identify this language. I hope that helps.
You bet. Thank you. I see Assemblymember Gilbert raised your hand there. Go ahead, please, Patty.
Thank you. You're going to transfer the subsurface rights to Sea Alaska Corporation. Is that correct?
Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Please.
That's right. So under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, every village corporation or urban corporation received the surface estate to between 1 and 7 townships of land. In Southeast Alaska, it was different. It was limited to 1 township of land. The regional corporation for the region always receives the subsurface under the village corporation's surface estate. That is correct.
So will that corporation adhere to the same regulations you just explained to us?
So in terms of public access, because they only have the subsurface, it shouldn't be relevant to the public access. But yes, the conveyance of land is subject to these public access provisions. Sea Alaska cannot limit public access to the lands. That's for the urban corporations. That's between the urban corporations and the community, and the urban corporations are subject to the provisions that I just listed. That's right.
And so, Ms. Gilbert, when I was first at Sea Alaska, I dealt with a number of village corporations, and from Sea Alaska's point of view, we wanted to mine for sand and gravel, for rock. And one of the things that they have to do always is negotiate with the urban corporation first. So the Wrangell Urban Corporation will have a lot of say-so on what they could or could not do to gain access to their subsurface.
Okay, thank you. Now, will you also own the tidelands that go with the land, if applicable?
No, I don't believe tidelands are conveyed. No. I would add to the list just to confirm with the Bureau of Land Management to make sure that you have comfort that I'm accurate about that. I'm certainly happy to follow up myself. I think a number of these questions, I'm happy to attempt to answer the questions, but I also would recognize that you'll want to hear that from the Bureau of Land Management as well. But it is my understanding the tidelands do not convey.
Okay. And several of these questions are from community members. Another question, if I may, Mayor, is who pays for the surveys? Is that part of the federal obligation or BLM?
Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Yep, go ahead, Andrew. Thank you.
Yes, the Bureau of Land Management would pay for those surveys. It can take many, many years, actually, to get to it because the program has been historically a little bit underfunded. Senator Murkowski has done a really good job of increasing the budget for BLM to get those surveys taken care of. But yes, BLM would cover that.
Okay, and then another question is the urban corporation, you did a really good job explaining at the public forum the difference between a village corporation and an urban corporation, and maybe that should be explained again, but what type of corporation will the urban corporation be? Will it be a Type C corporation or a LLC or a nonprofit?
The corporations are regular Alaska C corporations. So one of the things I heard a comment earlier saying something about the tribe, and I do want to make sure everybody understands that this is not owned by the tribe. It is not a tribal government. It is a Alaska corporation. So it does not have sovereign immunity. It's not exempt from taxes. It's a corporation like any other corporation in Alaska, except for it has native shareholders and it owns significant sections of land.
Mr. Mayor, Richard, would it be helpful if I give a quick overview of the difference between village corporations and urban corporations?
I think that's what she's asking. Please do.
Okay. So thank you for raising that. I think it's a really important question. As ANCSA was, as the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was being developed in the late 1960s, the process really got started in 1968, there were different versions of different models that were considered for establishing Alaska Native corporations. In fact, rather than the regional corporation model, for example, there was one model considered that would involve just a single giant Alaska Native corporation as one example for the larger economic driver. Again, as opposed to regional corporations. As the legislation developed, however, Congress really settled on a few different main models. One was the regional corporation, and as you know, there are the 12 regional corporations around the state of Alaska, of which Sea Alaska represents the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people in southeastern Alaska. And then you had village corporations, and each village in Alaska was listed in the statute itself. And so, if you were to go through the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, you'd see this list of 180 Alaska Native villages in one of the sections of ANCSA. Southeast Alaska was a little different. And Southeast Alaska has those villages listed in Section 16. And then for the most part, Congress established village corporations or defined the term village as a non-urban community that had a predominantly Native population, Alaska Native population. And as you know, Southeast Alaska was very different, right? We had the Russians as early as 1997, 98, whenever it was. And of course, the Americans showing up much earlier in Southeastern Alaska than other regions of Alaska, whether folks were looking for salmon or mining, gold, of course, and timber. And so Southeast Alaska had a somewhat different a population dynamic as compared to other areas of Alaska and Southern Alaska to some degree as well. And within the final sort of stretch of the effort to develop ANCSA, Congress recognized that there were several urban communities that were not covered by this generic a definition of village, and that it would not be right to, presumably, there's almost no legislative history on this, I should say, but the presumption was that it would not be right to simply exclude those Alaska Native populations from traditional Alaska Native communities simply because there had been a large influx of a non-Native population over the preceding 100 years. And so what Congress did is establish sort of this other category, which was the urban corporation. And you're familiar with urban corporations in the form of Goldbelt and Juneau and Sciatica and Sitka and two other urban corporations for Kenai and Kodiak in the state of Alaska. There were other communities that didn't fit the model either. Nome is a good example. Nome had a village corporation. Kasan had some sort of unique population characteristics, but also was included in the village corporation category. So Congress took some different steps to move different villages into different categories, but the urban corporation category really covered communities that had become urban in nature and had become predominantly, in most cases, non-native in nature as far as a population goes. And so it was a way to address the reality that in this handful of communities in Alaska, they didn't fit this model that Congress was going for the village corporation itself. So I hope that helps. But otherwise, the urban corporation looks a lot like a village corporation. It's still one township of land. It's the surface estate of the land.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Other questions from assembly members? Or Lisa, you may want to revisit your list here.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. One of the other things that has come up that we need to address is the potential reduction to PILT and SRS, the Secure Rural Schools payments. And I know Richard made the case at our last meeting, at the meeting last week, that at some point when there's development, the tax revenue might very well, you know, eclipse what revenue we might be losing in terms of PILT and SRS, but obviously that development is many years down the line. So we have to be concerned about what the impacts will be potentially immediately. We reached out to the state of Alaska, who administers the payments of PILT and SRS on behalf of the federal government, and asked if there were calculations that could be made. And the answer we got from them is no. They get that information either from the U.S. Forest Service for SRS, or from I can't even remember the agency they said for PILT. So they essentially said no way for us to be able to run the calculations on our own and know that. So I know when we were previously working with staff to Senator Murkowski with the Senate committee where the bill was initially heard when it was introduced late last fall, they were going to try to get some of those numbers to us, and we never received those. So I think we need to actually start with the staff again at the federal level in Murkowski's office and see if they can help get those calculations for all of our communities.
Yeah, we can't afford to lose anything. I mean, it is, it's beyond rough here. And I don't know, you know, some of you folks are in Southeast though, but Alaska's in pretty rough shape, and we're not just not seeing funding coming from the state, and it's just pretty rough. So the thought of losing anything is really difficult for us. And so, yeah, we'd really like to understand what that looks like and for the near term and the long term for sure.
Lisa, I think for the long, the argument is pretty simple for the long term. For the long term, to develop property and sales revenue that's subject to sales tax for many businesses that are developed would far outpace what you're seeing with PILT. So I think in the long term, that's pretty easy. The short term, it would be good to know how much we're really talking about. Are we talking about $1,500 a year? Are we talking about $6,000 a year? Maybe we're talking about $10,000 or $12,000 a year. I don't know. It'd be good to know that. Some initial revenues, I would think, would come from the land that is owned by the Forest Service right now, that would be owned by the Urban Corporation, if it's developed, would become taxable for property tax. And I believe that roads and other facilities would be considered developed. So there would be some initial property tax coming in right away.
Is there a way for us to calculate that, Lisa?
Not until we know the area where the improvements are. And the other thing is if land is used for commercial purposes, even if it's not a physical improvement, I believe that's also considered developed. So if they were to issue commercial permits, let's say for a guiding service or something like that, that's considered developed. I believe that's what you said, Richard. Is that correct?
I think it is, yes.
Well, I think we need to take it all into consideration. I'm definitely not trying to find roadblocks, but I really want us to go in with our eyes wide open so that there's not surprises, because that will just lead to issues down the road. So
one of the other hats that Todd Aniokia wears, besides Cedar Group and Alaska Native Without Land, is he's chair for Gold Belt Corporation. And Todd, does Gold Belt pay quite a bit of tax in the city and borough of Juneau?
We do, Mr. Mayor. If I may, I really appreciate the question. This came up at the last session, and one of the things that we talked about was really looking at the other Alaska Native corporations that are in existence, both in the region and throughout the state, and how their communities have benefited. And we really think that there's so much opportunity for these five communities to offset even some of the reductions in PILT, for instance. And if you look at it from the standpoint of, say, you know, we used Huntootum, for instance, as an example, one of the largest, or they are the largest contributor to their local tax base and largest employer. They have probably the largest community spend in Huna. Juneau for Gold Belt is you know has, is a large contributor to the tax base and one of the largest employers in the certainly in the summertime, but even year round operations. The you look at the corporate offices that many of these Alaska Native corporations have set within their communities. Just standing those up alone, the buildings that are built for you know to house them, the employment that's required to run these corporations from you know accounting and finance, human resources, information technology, legal, operations, management, and so forth is administrative. You know, it can be pretty expansive. And then you look at the amount of corporate spend that occurs in the community for goods and services that are even not affiliated with the particular ANC, but need to support them, utilities, food and garbage collection. I mean, all of those things are new as a result of this, of these operations. So we'll definitely, builds, there's been some incredible studies over the recent years from the McDowell Group and others that show the significant impact that ANCs have on their communities. And I think that it could be a really important lens to look through as you're considering maybe the offset and potentially even greater opportunity for revenue to the city as a result of this. This corporation being stood up, let alone, and that's in the, just in the short term. I mean, then you look at the long term opportunities regarding innovative economic development. So economies that aren't even realized right now that the ANC might bring into the community into the future are just you know can be profound. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd. Anne, I see your hand is up there. Please go ahead.
Mr. Reinhart answered my question. I was curious about if they were on, going to be on the property tax rolls.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Mr. Reinhart, did you have anything else to add to that?
Well, I just think, I'll let Ms. Gilbert go with her question.
Ms. Patty, go ahead.
My technology hand doesn't work. But I wanted to ask about the borough's obligations. Do we need to supply enhanced law enforcement out to these parcels and fire suppression services?
Lisa, do you have an answer to that from a borough standpoint? Or perhaps Todd may, you know, see if Todd seems to understand that process pretty well, but either of you can tackle that one?
I think, Mr. Mayor, if I may, I think it's going to depend on where the development is and what type of development. We have different property taxing structures on the island, and our borough, those areas within the borough that are off island as well, because of the level of services they receive. And so I would assume there would be something very similar to that. If it's an extremely, you know, a remote parcel where we're not going to be able to be providing regular service, garbage, water, you know, all of those things, then certainly the taxing structure is going to be less. And I think when it comes to providing things like police protection and emergency response, we go in, those are conversations that that happen as the development is being considered. And it may end up being a public-private partnership where perhaps the urban corporation provides some funding to the borough so that we're able to hire an additional officer so that regular patrols can go out and be made in those locations. And I see Todd maybe shaking his head there a little bit. Those are things that we as a municipal organization and as the urban corporation, I think, partner on those things, but I'll let him weigh in as well.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, Lisa's right. Those are all great ways to approach potential development. Some of these more distant areas. I know there are other corporations that have development that are at the, you know, at the outer edges of their municipalities. These are fee simple private lands, and in many cases have to the burden of caring for what occurs on those lands is, you know, is borne by the corporation. And so but in a lot of ways, the adjacencies, the co-development, the partnerships that can go on with development with adjacent municipal lands leads to really great solutions to collaboration and you know, sharing those long-term impacts and management.
Thank you, Todd. Mr. Reinhart, is there anything else, Richard, that you want to add to that?
No, I think they covered it really well.
Excellent, thank you. And Patty, that covered your question for you? Great. Is my internet slow, you guys? I apologize if it is. We've got 8 minutes left here, and I want to make sure that the assembly questions are answered. That was the purpose of tonight, that the assembly questions get answered. And Lisa, I don't know if you, oh, sorry, Assemblymember Morrison, go ahead, please.
I just got an idea. Where does all the money come from for the startup of the corporation? Is there an appropriations bill that's attached to this on the federal level?
This bill is different than, well, I say this bill. The bill that we had in the 116th Congress that just expired was the first one that had appropriation with it. It had $2.5 million per corporation to go for startup funding.
Okay.
But, so whether the 117th will have that exact same thing, different, I don't know, but I assume it'll be the same.
So you are assuming that there will be an appropriations bill to accompany this when it does go through?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I'm gonna go back to, I wanna make sure that we don't miss anybody. We've got about 5 minutes left. So I'm going to start with Lisa. Lisa, is there anything burning that was on your list that you have not had a chance to address?
No, Mr. Mayor, I don't believe there is. Carol Rushmore is on the line as well, and I would just ask her to weigh in if she believes we missed anything.
Hi, thank you. Mr. Reinhart, I really do appreciate, and also Mr. Vanjak, regarding the comments on the easements, because I think that helped me to understand a lot better what we need to look at and look for. But I look forward to working with both of y'all in the future. I guess the only thing that I would say is we had talked at the very beginning about possibly establishing, I don't know whether it's a committee or a group of people to try to sit down and look at some of these recreational sites and try to figure out what might be best with both partnerships here. So I just don't want that to get lost, and be that economic development committee or be it a group of individuals with different interests. I just don't want that to get lost in the shuffle. And
thank you for that reminder, Carol. And we are going to charge our city manager with making sure that that moves forward by working and collaborating with Mr. Reinhart and making that happen for sure.
Mr. Mayor, may I make one more comment?
Sure.
And that is, Mr. Mayor, we invited the public to listen to this. We did a big push on the radio, and we encouraged people to, if they had comments, they could make those under persons to be heard at the meeting following, or they're more than welcome to email the city clerk at clerk@wrangell.com, and we'll make sure either the borough takes that information or passes that on to Mr. Reinhart.
Excellent.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, I would like to acknowledge the three ladies I've had on here, LaVon, Nicole, and Cecilia, and just see if they had anything to add and before we close out. LaVon, how about you? You want to say anything?
I would just like to put it out there that the Wrangell Landless group is very open to working with the city and the borough as much as we can. If you want to have work groups or whatever, you know, to talk about or discuss, we'd be more than willing to do that. You know, we're looking at this whole entire thing as a partnership. You know, we want to be able to benefit not just our tribal members, but also benefit the city and the borough of Wrangell. I mean, it's kind of a cohesive partnership that we want to make sure that we're all on the same page.
Thanks, LaVon. If I could get Nicole for maybe 60 seconds, Nicole.
Sure, thank you so much. I was born and raised in Petersburg. I still own property there. And as all of us know, there's been this sort of historic rivalry between Petersburg and Wrangell. And what I wanted to say is that this type of meeting is the perfect example of when you start digging into the details of something that matters to the community. It's the people that make it happen. There are other pieces of this that are in the control of other parties, the BLM or Congress. But when you really, you know, the rubber really starts to meet the road, it's people who have a common purpose and a common goal who get it done. And that's what this meeting is all about. And I do, you know, I'm willing to definitely give Wrangell credit for being ahead of the other communities on this kind of a conversation with this much detail. And we thank you so much for it.
So I have one other Petersburg lady, Cecilia. Can you wrap it up for our side?
Well, I would just like to echo Nicole. I grew up in Petersburg as well. And I do have land, or I pay taxes on land there. Both my parents are permanent members of the Petersburg Cemetery. They're both gone. And so I still have family there. I love going back to Petersburg. It's so beautiful there. And I think Nicole was only referring to rivalry because of basketball. I think that was it.
Sure. Go Vikings!
We used to get a real thrill going out the road and seeing lights in Wrangell. You know, there's Wrangell. It was kind of goofy in a way, but at the same time, you know, we're neighbors. And I just wanted to reiterate that I appreciate Wrangell's support in the past. I'm hoping and praying that it will continue in the future. If you take a look and see how much money these corporations have brought into the state of Alaska, billions with a B. And that's so necessary right now. But at the same time, you know, we love our land. We want to take care of our land. We have a lot of those that think we're going to go out and log every tree in sight, and that is not accurate at all. I mean, of course, the boards that will be elected to the corporations when they're developed, it will be their decision. But also remember, it's been 50 years since we've been left out. So a lot of the younger people who have a different attitude about the lands and environment are coming in, and it will be their corporation to carry on. And so we appreciate the support. We've had to redraw some of our lines. We had a couple of cabins up in Portage Bay for our Petersburg selections, and we were happy to move it, make people happy, even though public access is stated in the bill that it will continue. So, but we want to be good neighbors. We've always wanted that. So yes, I appreciate this dialogue that's going on right now, and I hope it will continue. And I like the mayor's comments about win-win. It's always the best for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Assembly. We really appreciate the time.
Well, thank you again, Rich, yes, for doing this. My level of comfort is increasing, and I'm going to ensure with the city manager that we follow through with the committee idea. I apologize for having to move things along. I'm a little bit OCD on this. So we will let you folks sign off unless you'd like to participate in our regular assembly meeting, which you are more than welcome to do. Have a good evening, everybody, and thanks again. All the best to you.
Goodness,
thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let me get to my next item here. Kim, I'm going to just take a minute. I have to go to the printer and grab something out of the printer. So could we just hold for 1 minute before I call the meeting to order, if you don't mind? Thank you.